All right, welcome back to the North Star Method podcast, where we give you the mental skills to be at your best when it matters most. My name is Sebastian. I am the co-founder and CEO of North Star Performance Psychology.
And my name is Sean. I'm the co-founder and director of mental performance.
On today's episode, we are diving in to the science of the flow state. You've heard it before, that phenomenon where task and identity completely merge, where the voice in your mind goes quiet. People have reported hearing their shoulder pads over the loud roar of the audience. It's where you're not even thinking about what you're doing. You're just performing and accessing all of that practice and information without interruptions. How do you get into it? What is it good for? And what's actually going on in the mind and the body during the flow state? You can experience this state in a lot of different domains, whether it's at work, in high performance, or even in your day-to-day life. But one of the places where we experience it the most is in sport, and certainly in environments of consequence, where if you make a mistake, you could end up injured. One of those places that is very popular in our HQ city of Denver is skiing. And I hear that maybe recently you've had some experience with this.
I did recently have experience with this. So this weekend, parents flew out, very nice of them, and we went up to Breckenridge to do some skiing. For those of y'all who don't know me well or did not tune into the first episode, I am a recovering quadriplegic. So when I go skiing, it's what is called sit skiing. It's like an adaptive version. To try to have you visualize this, it's essentially like a sled seat on top, mounted on top of either one or two skis. And then you hold these devices in your arms called outriggers. They are essentially arm crutches with poles with little mini skis attached to the end of them. And you use those to turn, control speed, stop, and whatnot. So this is probably my fifth or sixth time ever doing it. I did not go at all last year. So there's been 2 years since I've been skiing. So certainly some rust, but I was just excited to get out there. The first day, the first kind of run we did was just knocking off the rust, getting the feel for turning and stopping and whatnot. Once I was able to go through probably half of that run successfully, I felt pretty confident in my ability to do the rest of it. And I had a really good instructor, shout out Ben at the BOEC, Breckenridge Outdoor Education Center. We were talking on the lift and he asked me what I did for work. And so I told him, mental performance coach, starting this company, whatnot. And when he heard that, he was very interested. And I don't know if he adjusted his coaching, but he kind of tailored it to more what I would understand, what I had a bandwidth for. A couple of the things he said that were particularly insightful were to focus on very simple kind of externally based cues, such as when you're going to turn, you want to do like a J motion in the snow rather than thinking about, oh, like rotate your wrist and apply pressure and all these kind of little technical movements. You kind of want to focus on the overall kind of outcome of the movement. And that reduces the cognitive load, which is how many things that we have to think about doing to execute a movement, which makes it a lot easier to execute. I would say one of the main things, or probably the main thing that stuck with me, was when he told me to synchronize my breathing with the turning. And you hear athletes talk about this a lot. Steph Curry has a clip that went viral. Somebody asked him, what's the one thing you would tell young basketball players? And you'd say, breathing is a skill, train your breathing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons for this. We've talked a little bit about like why breathing is helpful last week. But if you can synchronize your breath with the movement, for example, he told me to inhale before I executed the turn and exhale as I was executing the turn. Both the breathing obviously helped me get into a regulated state, a more kind of composed state where I was just focused on what I was doing, but also timing it with the actual movement I was doing really unlocked that frontal lobe, that present moment focus mind, where you're not really thinking about much else. You're just doing, you're just doing the task at hand and there's nothing else going on. And when I was really able to synchronize my breathing with the movements, I was easier able to enter these flow states, which made a big difference on the blue run that we did. For those of y'all who are not familiar with skiing, it goes green, which is like an easy kind of beginner level run, blue, which is more intermediate, and then blacks are advanced. So we went and did a blue, and one thing you kind of mentioned to start the show is that kind of like risky environment where there is actual consequence kind of requires you to really tap in and understand like, hey, there might actually be risk here. For me to mitigate the risk and give me the best chance of being successful, I need to really fucking lock in. And it was pretty easy to enter the flow state with all of these conditions being met. And yeah, I was able to successfully hit the blue. I wouldn't say it was the prettiest run, but it was super fun. And skiing is probably one of the easier sports to get into one of these flow states with. But yeah, dude, it was just a really good time.
Yeah, wow. So, I mean, definitely really cool when you have a coach or an instructor that is well-versed on the science. And it's certainly something that we think about a lot because not only do we work directly with athletes, but if you can implement the science of mental performance into the systems, into the way that you coach all of your players, it trickles down. And it sounds like, you know, that had an effect here. The first thing that comes to mind that I'm curious about is how did you know, or at what point did you know that that way of approaching it was helping you slip into a flow state?
By how immediately it helped. Mm. And there is actually like one of the, I don't know if it's a condition or a result of flow, but just the immediate feedback that you're getting that like what you're doing is actually having an effect. It kind of leverages your mind and especially your dopamine system to want to kind of keep chasing that. So for those, you probably have heard of dopamine, kind of that feel good chemical. It's also very much involved in the motivation systems and your drive. So when you release dopamine, you want to chase more of it. And so by kind of having that immediate feedback that what you're doing is working, it releases the dopamine, wants you to kind of keep leading into that.
Okay. So certainly if you want to slip into a flow state, you need to be aware of the triggers and the conditions that are optimal for it. And the first one that we're touching on here in this skiing example is immediate feedback. And so like you mentioned, whatever task you're doing, if you're able to instantly get the result of what you're doing, this keeps your motivation system engaged in a way where you're very much kind of closely, intimately engaged with the task at hand. And so it sounds like the instructions that were given allowed you to take your focus off of what am I supposed to be doing and keep it on what's the result of what I'm doing, which matches up perfectly with what you're talking about in terms of if I focus on the broader movement and the result of my movement, right? I'm almost like cognitively closer to the result mm-hmm. as opposed to being all these steps away from it.
Exactly. And a lot of strength and conditioning coaches will use these kind of cues rather than think about, oh, engage, it's a bench press, for example, engage chest, shoulders, triceps in this order. It's like, no, it's a pushing motion. Mm. It's a lot. And obviously you can adjust the angle of your elbows to whatever, but it's a lot more helpful to think, especially in like explosive movements, like external cue push, not like internally engage all of your muscles.
Yeah. So if you are an athlete or you're a coach who is trying to help people get cognitively closer to immediate feedback, another thing that I've heard from a performance psychologist who came through DU, he spoke about when working with swimmers, as they're standing on that diving board, getting ready to go in the water, there's a lot of things they could think of, right? It's, you know, their body position and, are they pushing off or, you know, where in the water do they want to land? They can get really caught up in all the intricacies of what that movement could look like. He had them think of nothing more than just like an arrow going through their body in the direction that they want to go. And so, it's literally shortening the amount of time that it takes for you to get from point A to point B mentally by creating this sort of like compound movement or this singular motion mm-hmm. that is key for getting into flow. Another one of the most important conditions to get into flow is just having clear goals, knowing what needs to be done. Did you notice anything about the way that you approach skiing here that helped clarify the goals? Could you, I guess, give an example of how somebody might not have clear goals going into something like that?
Yeah. So for me, a lot of times, and this is actually a very much broader conversation of how to get into like a peak performance state, a flow state. What is the expectation? Is it results based, outcomes based, or is it process execution based?
Huge.
And for me, it did help. Now that I'm kind of thinking about it, my goal was to have fun skiing. I wasn't trying to like necessarily like have any metrics. And so if I was skiing and doing well and having fun, then I've reached my goal. I had no concern about the outcome by any means. So I was maybe more easily immersed in the present moment. Now, if we're thinking about like an actual like competitive skier or a competitive performer in general, they want good results, obviously. No one's playing to lose. They're in the business of being successful. It's a weird kind of reversal mindset shift, to go from wanting the results and the outcome to just pure laser focus on executing your process and making the most of that, that actually leads and gives you a better chance at getting the results that you want. You think about when you started playing sports or started the performance that you like to do, you usually don't do it, you know, for outcomes at first. You start playing because it's fun and you enjoy doing it and you want to do it as much as possible. As you kind of graduate to higher levels like high school, college, pro, etc., there's more at stake. There's more sources of pressure. These things kind of disrupt your ability to enter this flow state. And if you can really tap into, I want to just go out there and have fun and play my best and go enjoy this process, you find that athletes will all, professional, the most successful people in the world will all resound with this, go out there and have fun. I'll say one example, the Olympics this past year in Paris, the golf round. They took a picture of everybody with like a whiteboard, every golfer who was competing, and they had them write down what their goal was. And everybody, not named Scottie Scheffler, had a goal that was like a score or gold, silver, whatever. Scottie's was like, have fun. I think he even had a smiley face.
Yeah.
And Scottie won gold.
Yep.
So another, just one example of this phenomenon.
So that second piece, key conditions for flow, right? We talked about immediate feedback, now having clear goals. Flow is oftentimes touted as an antidote to burnout. And like you said, there is this counterintuitive idea, which is that not focusing on the real reason why you're doing this helps you achieve the real reason why you're doing this. So many times when we're working with athletes, the marker of success of our work is that they'll start telling us, yeah, man, I just feel like how I did when I was a kid, you know, when I just used to play in the backyard with my friends. And as you get older and more expectations are placed on you, more of your survival is at stake because this is your career. You know, the harder it is to have a good time because the consequences are bigger, right? When you were a kid, if you lost, you might have just lost bragging rights. Now, for these athletes, you know, a gold medal is on the line. Counterintuitively, it's going back to that same childlike mindset where it's like, I just do this for fun. Not only is that going to help you achieve the result that you actually want, but it's going to be one of the key conditions to enter this flow state. And that brings me to maybe the next and most important component of getting into flow. You had mentioned, you know, the different runs in skiing, whether that's, you know, starting off at a bunny hill or going all the way to like a double black diamond. What is the importance of choosing the right skill to challenge ratio for getting into flow?
So the ideal ratio there is for the challenge to be either just at or outside of your skill range. So I guess I'll use myself as an example. after doing a full day of runs on greens, I had developed the confidence that I was able to do those pretty successfully. And then on the second day, Ben, my instructor, said, do you want to try a blue? I did have a little bit of a heart racing, just naturally, like, oh shit, a blue? Like, can I do that? I've skied 4 times or 5 times and I'm might not be that great at it. But then he's like, you're doing really good on these, and figured it might be more fun. I was like, okay, like, I guess that's fair reasoning. But I was able to recognize with that confidence that I had built executing those other runs, the awareness that I had that I was able to do those. And also, like, understanding that, like, the instructor kind of has me, and, like, I didn't have a huge safety risk. I was like, all right, I'm able to at least try it. And by really getting into it, and again, this goes to, like, the heightened risk, because you're going way faster and a fall is going to hurt way more. It kind of forces you to lock in, and that is also requisite, or that requisite belief in yourself makes you able to do it.
Yeah. So we need immediate feedback. We need clear goals, but we also need the ideal balance of challenge and skill. And that means that whatever task you're doing, if you want to slip into flow, it has to be just beyond what you think you're capable of. And that's also why flow state is the optimal place to learn and improve skills. Because you're putting yourself in a place where when your skills are just outstretched, you don't experience those thoughts of, oh, I don't know if I can do this. You're so engaged with the activity that thoughts of doubt are not a concern. Yes, clear goals, immediate feedback, balance of challenge and skill, or skill to challenge ratio. The last and maybe most important piece of getting into a flow state is present moment focus. Mm-hmm. And so whenever we talk about states like this, whether it's flow, whether we're talking about clutch performances, whether we're talking about any kind of self-regulation, getting yourself in the space that you need to be in for the task at hand, present moment focus is maybe the most leverage that you have over getting out of the thoughts and feelings of nervousness or anxiety or fear and into the activity that you're supposed to do. That's why no matter who you are, what you do, we want people to train mindfulness and meditation because it's usually a skill involved in basically every type of mental performance activity or exercise.
I was just going to say, like, you find that a lot of the main things associated with mindfulness are also those things associated with flow, such as present moment focus, lack of judgment in terms of, like, what happens and the thoughts that are attached to them. You're not necessarily thinking and judging yourself for the thoughts that you're having. You're just kind of letting the thoughts fly by if they're occurring. But yeah, that's just what I would say.
Actually, that's a really interesting nuance that I don't see talked a lot about in the flow literature is, like you said, judgment. The other side of that coin is curiosity. So, you know, you can try to hammer present moment focus by, like, redirecting and, you know, letting things go. But something that you can do to make the redirecting easier is to reframe from judgment to curiosity. So did you have any experience that at all in this situation where it's like, you know, maybe you could be like, ooh, I don't know, I don't think I can do this, or that could be hard, and, like, shift to curiosity?
Yeah. So luckily, like I said earlier, when I was on the mountain, I was kind of just trying to get out there and have fun. So there wasn't a whole lot of judgment if I wasn't going to be that good. One thing that we find is associated with making it easier to access a flow state is an activity involving novelty and risk.
Mm-hmm.
So risk, like we've stated, falling hurts. But novelty, it's been a while and I haven't skied in a bit, and hitting a blue or even greens at this point was relatively novel. And I approached it curiously, I guess, from a place of curiosity. And I was more so like, okay, like, let's see if I can do this. Not, oh no, what if I can't do this?
Yeah.
Which I guess are the two sides of that coin.
Exactly.
The curiosity being like, huh, let's go in there and see. And then the judgment being like, oh my God, what if I don't?
So like we said, there are these sort of conditions or triggers that are helpful for getting into flow that are always in your control. There are some features of the activity or the environment that may or may not be in your control, but if you're aware of them, They can help characterize whether you're in a flow state or not, novelty being the first one that I wanted to speak about. And that's a cool interaction between this idea of like curiosity helping you be present when novelty is part of the environment, because this is true for activities much broader than just a sport or any other type of performance. We have a relationship with novelty in day-to-day life, and we see people who are fundamentally oriented towards judgment when they see novelty versus curiosity. This comes up in the form of, you know, judging a book by its cover or even stereotypes. These are things where we're seeing something that we don't know too much about, and we instantly have this statement or judgment instead of a question. We often draw connections back to this evolutionary perspective. And we talk a lot about the two broad kind of poles of your nervous system, fight or flight, rest and digest. When you're in that fight or flight, you're in that survival mode, which is certainly normal when you get into a new situation. You're going to default to judgment. Like, that's what you're wired to do. So it's not that, you know, you want to beat yourself up about it, but if you can start to recognize judgment as a feature of being in fight or flight in a new environment, then curiosity is basically your gateway, not only, you know, out of fight or flight, but into the present moment and into high performance.
Yeah, I mean, and it also goes to, or it's something important to think about, I should say. What kind of disrupts, what kind of like thoughts or occurrences might disrupt this ability to enter a flow state or enter a state of mindfulness and lack of judgment and curiosity? Because like we said, they're both kind of similarly associated. What do you think some of the biggest sort of enemies of flow are?
Yeah, that is a good segue into it, being that, I mean, I think judgment is a huge one, lack of curiosity, because it pulls you out of the present moment. And I think every roadblock to flow is going to have something to do with getting pulled out of the present moment. So, you know, it's thoughts about self and others. I think really common ones are expectations. So, yes, this could be in a performance, like maybe you've been getting a lot of hate on, you know, on social media about your recent performances. Now you have a chip on your shoulder. That could be a good motivator, but it could also be a huge distraction. And so what's the difference between getting into a flow state and proving people wrong versus getting so caught up on proving people wrong that you can't get into a flow state? You want awareness of your thoughts and feelings as they relate to the external environment. But then the other side of that coin is thoughts and feelings as they relate to the internal environment. So, you know, that's belief in yourself. Mm-hmm. That's ideas of identity, essentially, like who you are. If you don't believe yourself to be somebody that can do hard things or that can get into a novel environment and figure it out, if you don't believe that you are adaptable and resilient, then those things could easily pull you out of flow as well. So while flow is something that we want to have skills to get into in the present moment, there's also these broader themes and beliefs about our life that make us more or less likely to be good candidates to get into flow state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we even touched on this in a prior episode, as like, who is the person that you want to show up as, and what are the characteristics of that person, that best self, if you will. Do I want to be resilient when a challenge is faced, or when I'm faced with a challenge? This can actually apply to that balance between skill and challenge ratio, or whatever we were talking about. Do I believe that I can rise to the occasion and actually handle it? And a lot of this belief system, or a lot of the belief systems that we have, come from the repetition of thought, kind of like we were talking about last episode. And the more you can say these things to yourself that essentially convince you and shift your mindset toward that best self that you want to be, that resilient, confident, composed self, the more we find that we believe it and our actions reflect it.
Yeah. So once again, mental skills have a reverse tolerance. The more that you practice them, the more powerful and potent they become. Getting into flow state, every human has experienced it, but the people who we see doing, you know, odds-defying activities and crazy things on a world stage, these are people who have built their internal environment to be conducive to getting into flow more often And a big piece of that is their beliefs. Now, when we talk about the North Star method, we can put it on sort of like a quadrant basis. And what I mean by that is we're always talking about self-regulation and self-awareness. We can also extend those over time. So self-awareness and self-regulation in the present moment can look like a body scan and a breathing exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also self-awareness over time. Like, what do I really care about? Who am I? Those big questions, bringing awareness to your identity and your sense of self, that can also affect how well you can get into flow or how well you can perform. Self-regulation can also be extended over time. So there are skills that you can do in the moment to regulate yourself, but it's also how you set up your life in the long run. So having clear goals in the present moment is a big deal for flow, but also having clear goals for your life. And that's a very lofty thing. It can be very intimidating for a lot of people. I think some people would even argue that they can't figure that out. And we strongly believe that's not the case. We firmly advocate for the fact that if people can practice these skills and follow this method, that they can have a clear idea of who they are, what they want, and how they're going to get it, which is going to make them a much more likely person to get into flow, whether it be in the present moment or just more commonly across their lifespan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the clear goals thing is a very kind of interesting topic to think about for long-term self-awareness and self-regulation. I guess thinking about this New Year's resolution. Geez, I cannot talk today. The New Year's resolution phenomenon, and why so many resolutions just fail. What a resolution is just an outcome goal. It's, you hear this in the name. It's, I want to get in better shape, lose weight. I want to make more money, eat healthier, eat more. These are all the overall like outcomes of what unidentified work needs to be done. And so outcome goals are good to have. Obviously, you want to have a clear vision, like we said, of where you want to go. The reason resolutions fall through is that you fail to set the goals that actually define how you're going to get there, which are the process goals, the day-to-day, week-to-week kind of actions that you're going to take that are going to lead you in the direction. So, for example, like losing weight or getting in better shape. That's the outcome. What is the process goal that you're going to do to get there? Maybe it's 4 times a week I'm going to the gym, or I'm going to cook unprocessed whole foods every single day this week, or whatever it might be. These goals are all specific. They're measurable, they're achievable, relevant, and time-based, which is follows that SMART goal framework, if you've ever heard of SMART goals. But it really kind of leverages, similarly when we were talking about skiing, leverages this motivation system. When you achieve a goal, it shows to release dopamine, no matter what that goal is. And if you can kind of set goals based on are fully based on the execution of your process, and it's fully within your control, and it still leads you in the right direction, then the more you achieve those goals, the more dopamine is released, the more motivated you are to keep going and eventually achieve those long-term outcome goals.
Spot on. A couple more things that can get in the way of getting into a flow state that you want to be aware of. So we talked about distractions in the internal and external environment, whether that's expectations or beliefs about yourself. But one of the much more practical ones is just like the technology that we exist around. So now more than ever, we live in a world that is constantly pulling our attention away from the present moment. And so thinking about your day-to-day life, how do you engage with these things that are distracting, whether that's, social media, TV, even the billboards that you drive by? What is your relationship with those things? And what do you say to yourself when you experience them? So if you want to get into flow state during your sport or during your, pitch presentation, then the way that you can train that outside of that area is by noticing how long you've been doom scrolling for, like getting good at realizing, my algorithm is like trying to make me angry today, and it's just when I was about to like get off, it showed me something that it knows really gets to me. Getting good at that is going to help you get into the flow state more in performance situations.
Mm-hmm. The inputs dictate the outputs.
Yep.
I actually was talking to a client today about this. And he was thinking about like how to optimize his practice to get the best looks to be a starter. And I asked him what he thinks needs to be done to improve his performance. And he said, I think I just need to like lock in at practice. I said, okay, so what does it take to lock in at practice? Kind of developing a pre-practice routine to optimize his chance of entering this, I guess, flow state. And one thing that he mentioned is last period, he's a high school lacrosse player for context. And last period, they have open period. They all have like iPads and shit now. So they can like play games. And he does. He plays Clash Royale specifically. And he notices when he's kind of just playing this game and then he has to go into the locker room, going to practice, he's kind of like mentally in a bit of a funk. And it's like, yeah, dude, you're either scrolling Instagram or you're playing Clash Royale right before you have to go lock in. It's probably not the easiest condition to flip that switch. It's kind of immediate instant gratification, high level stimulus, blue light being just emitted to you. It's all not good for making that shift. So what we did is thought about what are your inputs? What do you need to start doing differently, stop doing and continue doing that's good? And that start, stop, continue framework can be very helpful for these kinds of clients. But yeah, that was like one of the biggest things, like be mindful of your inputs, both social media, even like he thought about hydration and nutrition as well. So yeah, inputs dictate outputs.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, flow is something that not only do you need skills in the present moment and in and around your performance to access it, but it's something you have to think about in your day-to-day life. You know, if this is a state that you want to be in more consistently, then the way that you live your whole day can impact that. The final piece that we want you to be aware of in terms of potential killers of flow is just rest. So flow state is an intense state. You are using all of the faculty of your brain at the highest order, and this takes a lot of energy. Now, it takes even more energy to overthink stuff while you're trying to perform. But this is a more efficient kind of burst of your willpower. And so how can people make sure to recover properly after being in a flow state so that when they need it again, that battery is replenished?
Yeah. So it's funny. It requires a bit of discipline, especially for high performers, to rest. And a lot of times discipline is traditionally thought of as going into the gym or going to work, or going to practice, waking up early. A lot of times this comes easily for these people. They love going to the gym. They love waking up early. They love going to practice and they want to be on 100% all the time. Cause like we said, the flow state is like the best state you can be in. And you want to just chase more and more and more and more of it. Now it's not sustainable and it takes, you know, developing the awareness and having the conversations to realize I need to now implement discipline to rest and recover so that I can sustain this kind of lifestyle or this kind of performance level for a while. So understanding that it is something that is not maybe the most easy thing to make time for, but if you want to be a disciplined person, which I think most high performers do, you have to do the things that you don't want to do that you know are going to be helpful and do them as if you want to do them. And I'll always say, at least it's just chilling.
Right. Yeah, like most people have to push themselves to do the hard thing. High performers and most of the people, you know, in our audience are people who love doing hard things. So discipline to do easy stuff and take it easy. And to get really practical about what that looks like, yes, like you could have your rest kind of baked into your routine. But one thing that can help you recover physiologically immediately following an intense effort is doing some kind of down regulation immediately following the workout or the flow state. So a lot of times, and I used to fall victim to this, I would work out in the morning and I'd be like on go, feeling really hype. And I'd keep that vibe going into the day, but I'd notice that my energy would dip sooner than if right after the workout, you turn the music off, maybe you get your binaural beats, maybe you do some breath work, but you do something that sort of like puts a bookend on that intense effort.
Yeah, exactly. Like that is done. It's time to shift into rest and recovery mode.
Yeah.
So, which is like a totally different state. And as you have said a lot, and I say a lot, I guess too, is knowing what state you want to be in and knowing how to activate that state at the right times.
Exactly. That's what this whole thing is truly a matter of.
Yeah.
Now, we have to give some credit where credit is due. There has been a lot of research done on the flow state and a lot of people who have contributed to understanding the triggers and the conditions related to it.
It's not just us. Yeah.
Certainly not. The man who coined the term flow was a psychologist by the name of Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, and he wrote what is the most beat up book that I owned. It's called Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience. This was a blockbuster book in psychology, was at the forefront of what was called the positive psychology movement, where people started asking the question, how can psychology help us not figure out what to do about the past, but how to make the future better? Mm-hmm. And that is a big piece of our philosophy. Obviously, we talk a lot about how psychology has been pinned down, pigeonholed as this thing that you do to fix things that have gone wrong, when the truth is, it's good for so much more than that. It can help more things go right too. Csikszentmihalyi is the guy who said it first. And the interesting thing about the book Flow, and the reason that I've read it so many times over, is that really it's only the first chapter that is absolutely crucial for, I believe, everyone on earth to understand. It's a catchy title. Of course, I want to get into this flow. I want to get to a place where I'm not having thoughts, where time, disappears and I feel like I could live forever and do my best forever. It sounds great. But what Csikszentmihalyi argues in this book is that learning to be in the flow state is a matter of much more than high performance. It's a matter of taking your life back.
Mm.
Throughout the first chapter, which again, highly recommend that everyone checks it out. He argues that we live in a world where we can't really rely on the external environment anymore to help us formulate our internal environment. At one point in time, it was a lot easier to look to external stimulus, including institutions, to give us our values, to tell us what's right and wrong. And we could trust them to give us the information on how to live a good life. Now, that's not to say that nobody out there is putting out good information. But the truth is, even though he wrote this book more than two decades ago, his warning is even more prescient now. We live in the age of misinformation. It's hard to find the truth of what's going on. And there are so many opinions on what's right and wrong. I mean, even if you just take, for example, the diet space, how many times have you been on reels and you've been scrolling and somebody tells you, stop eating red meat, it causes cancer. And then the next one is, I lived to 120 years old eating nothing but steak tartare. It's hard to know what's true.
Can't eat anything. Or sleep or wake up.
Yeah, like you should. Don't even go to sleep.
Yeah, like you have to have plenty of sleep, but you also have to wake up when the sun rises and go to bed. Like and it's all valid. I want to say there's a lot of validity to a lot of it. I shouldn't say it's all valid. But at some point, it's just overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. And so the reaction that most people have to this overwhelm is just kind of live a small life. You know, it's like, maybe I have hopes and dreams. Maybe I could do better, but let me just take it one day at a time. And what happens when you do that is you become much more prone to two types of drives, biological and societal. So on a biological level, that's what you want to eat. And due to heavily processed foods and the scientists that have made our snacks more addictive than some drugs, you can't trust your biological impulse anymore. When you eat chips, your body doesn't even release the hormone that tells you that you're full. So if you can't trust that, and then you have societal messaging, which we really don't even have to give examples as to how that can potentially steer you wrong. For example, advertising, right? We live in a world where, and I said we don't have to give examples, but we live in a world where we're sold lifestyles and we're promised that if we purchase certain things or get certain labels, that will fill out our identity for us. This is a backwards approach. And so you're going outside in. And I love to give this example to our clients. If you look out your window right now and you look around at nature, can you find a single thing that grew from the outside in? Imagine a big redwood that grew from bark to core to roots, meaning that it's completely hollow at first, As soon as the external environment gets messy, it's going to get blown right over. That's why you don't want to go outside in. You want to go inside out. You want to grow from the core first, so you have solid roots, so that when it gets windy and turbulent in the world, you can stand strong. And so what Csikszentmihalyi argues is that learning to get into the flow state is not just about scoring more touchdowns in big games. It's actually taking back control of your attention. Your attention is the most valuable commodity that you have. And it's the one thing in common with all of these distractions and traps that we're talking about that they're trying to take advantage of. And so by learning to reclaim your attention and being able to use it to shift into the state that you want to be in, you have power over all of the influences that are normally essentially programming you and trying to take your time, your life, your money, whatever it may be.
That Redwood example is really beautiful, man.
Yeah, I use that one. I use that one a lot. I did come up with that. I will give myself credit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but, you know.
Very rarely do people in our field.
Right, yeah. It's a lot of credit where credit's due.
It's a lot of paraphrasing.
The best way to sum up what Csikszentmihalyi meant would be to take the words directly from the source. I want to read you a passage, page 16, of his book, Flow, where he says, "While humankind collectively has increased its materials a thousandfold, it has not advanced very far in terms of improving the content of inner experience." Right? We live in a world where we have all the technology, everything we could ever want, and yet more people report being lonely, sad, and unfulfilled than ever before. There is no way out of this predicament except for an individual to take things in hand personally. If values and institutions no longer provide a supportive framework like they once did, each person must use whatever tools are available to carve out a meaningful, enjoyable life. One of the most important tools in this quest is provided by psychology. Up to now, the main contribution of this fledgling science has been to discover how past events shed light on present behavior. It has made us aware that adult irrationality is often the result of childhood frustrations. But there is another way that the discipline of psychology can be put to use. It is in helping answer the question, given that we are who we are, with whatever hang-ups and repressions we may have, what can we do to improve our future? To overcome the anxieties and depressions of contemporary life, individuals must become independent of the social environment to the degree that they no longer respond exclusively in terms of its rewards and punishments. To achieve such autonomy, a person has to learn to provide rewards to themselves. They have to develop the ability to find enjoyment and purpose regardless of external circumstances. This challenge is both easier and more difficult than it sounds. Easier because the ability to do so is entirely within each person's hands. Difficult because it requires a discipline and perseverance that are relatively rare in any era, and perhaps especially in the present. And before all else, achieving control over experience requires a drastic change in attitude about what is important and what is not. And that's why the North Star Method is entirely predicated on helping you figure out exactly that. You are not destined to be doom scrolling for your whole life, to be wondering what's true or what's not. You don't have to be lost in a sense of meaninglessness or hopelessness. There is a rampant pandemic of people who are pessimistic, who think that this is the end of times and that it's never been worse. But the reality is that in your time on this earth, you have all the control in the world of how fulfilled, happy, and purposeful and meaningful your experience is. That is the point of our work. So by now, it should be abundantly clear that the flow state is something that doesn't happen by chance. It's something that you have control over and that you can implement into your day-to-day life to be more engaged, more present, and perform at your best when it matters most. You need present moment focus. You need to make sure that the challenge to skill ratio is there. You need clear goals and environments without distractions. And you need to recover and recharge so that you can replenish that reserve for when you need it. Ultimately, flow is more than a performance tool. It might be the gateway to reclaiming your experience in a world that is constantly trying to take ownership of it. If you got any value out of this episode, a no-cost way to you to support our efforts is to like and subscribe, whether you're on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Give us a follow at North Star Method on Instagram, and we're releasing new episodes of the podcast every single week on Mondays. If you have any topics that you're interested in, be sure to send them in, DM at North Star Method, or email us, go@northstarknows.com. That being said, we appreciate you tuning in. As always, We will see you next week.
Love y'all. Peace.